Welcome to Terrible People Doing Terrible Things. I'm Laura, a true crime and horror fan who enjoys researching dark and twisted stories.
And I'm Amanda, and I'm a licensed psychologist who enjoys studying the worst of humanity. And today we are going to bring you another Unsatisfactory, which is just the title we've come up with for these little mini episodes. So it's not terrible information, but it's unsatisfactory.
It's not great.
Still not good. So I don't know if you saw this, because I know you are on TikTok more regularly than I am, because technology, this old lady can't figure it out.
I don't know. I think it's my short attention span.
I mean, it's quick. You know, it's kind of that like 15 second, 60 second, you know, on to the next thing, and you can scroll.
Easy gratification. Yes.
So there apparently is a viral TikTok claim about why chainsaws were invented. Have you heard this?
I have heard this. I heard this. It was actually came up on my For You page.
Of course it did. Nice.
Because you know me, if it has to do with anything horrible, it's on my For You page.
Mm-hmm.
So I did hear the viral reason. I have no idea if that is true. I did not look it up whatsoever. But if it is true, holy fucking shit. And I won't spoil it. I'll just let you go ahead and tell all the people out there.
Yeah. And this is from... it is innews.co.uk is the website where I found this information that I'm going to be referencing today. And it's by Alex Finnis is the author of this little article. And I'm not going to read like verbatim.
Yeah.
However, I'm going to use a lot of the information. So there is some truth to the claims on TikTok that chainsaws were invented to help with childbirth.
Okay.
This is true. If there was a fact check, it would be true with maybe a little bit of a caveat.
Stipulations.
Yes.
There are stipulations.
Yes.
You know what's funny though? When it did come across and they were like, it was invented for childbirth, it didn't even fucking faze me.
Yeah.
I was like, of course it was.
You're like, of course it was.
Of course it was. Of course it was. Because, I mean, we didn't even like looking at women's vaginas, and then we didn't even practice giving, you know, delivering babies. Might as well fucking get in there with a chainsaw.
Dear God. Just get it over with. No one wants to see this.
The hole's obviously not big enough. Let's make it bigger with a chainsaw.
It obviously is not. It's not. So the first chainsaw was invented to be used in childbirth.
Okay.
That is true.
What did it look like?
But exactly. So there's this prototype, and it was actually called the osteotome. And
bones.
Yeah, bone.
Bone.
So it was a bone made saw. To be able to cut through bone. And it has a little like hand crank and everything. So I'm gonna share my screen with you real quick because I have a picture of it.
And if you guys ever want to see what we're sharing back and forth and everything like that, we do have a YouTube channel where you can see our episodes. So check that out.
Stare at our faces. Look at these images. So here is the osteotome.
Very tiny, handheld.
Handheld. Yes. It's got the little rough little chain on it.
Is that to be inserted in the vagina?
My guess is that it would. So let's see. It says that the procedure it was used in, symphysiotomy.
Mm-hmm.
Symphysiotomy. So that was the surgical procedure where they cut the cartilage of the pubic bone down there to help widen the pelvis.
For when the baby's trapped.
Yeah. So if the baby gets trapped, can't get it out.
Oh, and it says there is no possibility of performing. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not as bad as it seems in the sense that they're just always whipping out this chainsaw to like cut women's vaginas or something.
I am a little mad that that is the early representation of what we now use to cut fucking trees down.
Why?
So
And we're just strong. You got them strong.
Vagina built like tree.
Sturdy birth and hips.
I don't know. Pelvis is built like a tree. I mean, look, it makes sense. I mean, it's the, it almost looks similar to me as a like a handheld drill that they use for drilling into craniums and stuff like that. It's about what you do with it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's how it's being used. I mean,
it was used for a certain medical procedure. It wasn't used like in daily gynecology. It was used to, you know, if it couldn't get the baby out, they gotta. Yeah, widen that shit up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I mean, it's what they had available technology-wise, you know, like the article's mentioning it used to just be done with a knife. I can't imagine how...
Ugh, into bone. Yes. Into bone.
Yes. I mean, like, and I've... We cut, like, ribs and chicken, you know, here sometimes, and it's hard to do.
This is why I couldn't be a surgeon.
God, am I going to be thinking about this now when I'm cutting ribs and chicken?
Probably. It's gonna happen for sure.
Yay.
Welcome to your new synapse that just formed.
Oh, like, God. Yeah, neural connections and neural associations connection that have made. Formed now. Neural so pathway.
So now when you cut bone, you're gonna think about
lovely. And it seems like this was developed, let's see if there's a date. So back in at least the 1830s.
Yeah.
There was
okay.
some form of this little handsaw developed. So
I mean, come on.
Old.
This is probably a fucking great, it's probably a medical leap in the gynecology field, honestly.
Well, it was. And I wonder how many things that were initially, and we still have these forms of like tools used in surgery. They're just much more precise, smaller,
or
less torture device looking.
I don't think we use a so when they cut bone now, they don't use the mechanism, whatever that is called, of the chain.
Yes.
For the chainsaw.
Yeah, it's more like
because
a circular
obviously,
saw.
Yeah, as that is spinning around, you could be damaging tissue that is up top of where you're trying to like push down and cut and stuff like that. So it's just not very like
precise.
Precise. So now we have bone saws and stuff like that that are electric that have, you know, a cover on the top and then just this little like saw at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously things like that are safer. So
well, they're safer.
It's probably why this didn't get you. And this was like, oh, let's cut down trees with this.
Yeah. And it's safer, even if it's being, you know, the bone saw is being used on a cadaver, it's safer for the person performing the procedure because.
100%.
Yeah.
That's sending bone chips flying.
My bone dust. You did not want to breathe that in.
No, you don't want to breathe that in. You could get hit with like bone is sharp.
Yeah, shrapnel.
Yeah,
shrapnel.
I imagine it just wasn't a great layout and design for what that, but it was a great layout and design for cutting down trees.
And it was a great layout and design compared to a fucking kitchen knife or whatever kind of knife they were using.
Yeah, whatever they were using before, it was better than that. So, but when you hear like on TikTok, when you're like, and that's the problem, part of the problem with TikTok is that people hear things and they take these things as fact. But you have to understand that people on TikTok can make whatever content they want, just like the rest of the internet. And you need to do your research when you hear things before you tell other people this as fact.
Well, and
so do your research.
You need to. And I love that there's now this psychologist on TikTok that's taking some of the videos that are false or misleading and debunking these myths.
Oh, are you talking about the guy?
No, it's a female.
Really?
She's a professor, and I can't remember the name of her channel or her ID or whatever on TikTok, but she is debunking things where it's like, if someone constantly laughs when they're around you, they love you. Or
please don't do that.
There was another one that I was just like, wow, how did this get started?
It's just somebody somewhere sitting in their room was like, hey, you know what'd be funny?
Yeah.
And that's all it takes. So, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, people are like, oh, well, you shouldn't be able to make that content. Then no, it's fine. You should do your research when you hear something.
Yeah.
And you should look it up and you should, you know, make sure that it is fact before you tell other people the same thing as fact.
Don't just latch onto it without some level of scrutiny.
Right.
And suspend, what is it? Disbelief.
Yeah.
Suspended disbelief. What's the, can't think of the term for it, but it's where you leave open the opportunity that the information may not be correct.
It's called religion. No.
Yeah.
It's just like, it could or could not be true. Who knows?
Yeah.
But but when you scroll on TikTok and you hear like, oh, a chainsaw was originally, like, you're only hearing a couple of seconds and the immediate thing you think of is a fucking chainsaw.
Fucking Husqvarna.
That runs on gas in your vagina. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It gave, and like, yes, I heard it and it was very.
But no.
Yeah. Because you're like, I'm pretty sure that they knew that those were too big to get in there.
She'd be dead.
100%.
We'd all be dead.
No one.
We would have died off.
Yeah. Humans would have died as a species.
Yeah. Yeah. So stop and just consider, like, how true does this actually seem?
Or just give it a quick Google.
I love doing that. I love. There's also this wonderful Google option called Google Scholar.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I use, and you can find primary source information. Sometimes it's hard to find the PDF, but you can find the citations and the abstract to a lot of scientific journals and articles. And I love it, love it, love it. So I'm on there a lot.
if anyone ever needs citation or writing advice, Amanda's got you covered.
Yes.
Don't ask me, though, because I can barely spell potato.
Well, I can barely spell potato. I just know where to find information about potatoes.
I know where to look it up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I've got one other small story that is in no way connected. Well, I guess it is. Childbirth.
Okay.
This is about kids.
Neat.
About kids, Laura. So kids, and the title of the article, and this is Research Digest. Speaking of research, the British Psychological Society. There is an article from June 3rd, 2013. And the title is Kids Experience Schadenfreude by Age 4, Maybe Earlier.
God, I've heard Schadenfreude.
Yes. I think a lot of people have heard it and unfortunately haven't looked into it because I love this term. And I'm going to explain it. So Schadenfreude is the phenomenon where seeing another person suffer, like if they deserve to suffer, brings special pleasure.
Oh.
It's a special type of pleasure. So like.
So a masochist, not a masochist, a.
Not exactly a sadist or masochist.
Sadist. That's the word I was looking for, was sadist.
Yeah. Not exactly a sadist. So like Hitler, most everyone can agree Hitler was an asshole. So when I learned he had uncontrollable flatulence, I loved that.
Yeah.
Because fuck him.
Yeah.
So that's an example of Schadenfreude to a very like minor extent because it's just flatulence.
Yeah. So it's like not a major, major thing, but it's like just a little, it's like the lady that you don't like across the street got her hair burned at the hairdresser. Schadenfreude.
Yes. It's comeuppance. It's comeuppance. And you love that shit.
Okay.
So I love Schadenfreude.
I like that.
Love this phenomenon. And there is a new study that is the first to investigate, you know, do kids start experiencing this? Is this an adult phenomenon or is this in children? Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Kids are the worst.
Oh my God. Kids are mean.
They are. They're really mean.
Kids are mean, but they're also not very forward thinking. So I don't know if they understand how malicious.
They don't. And that's why we let them be malicious, is because we know that they can't fucking help it, but they're still fucking evil.
Well, yeah. And you can teach empathy.
Yeah. You have
to. You can do a better job of teaching empathy than we have.
You need to teach empathy. You need to teach feelings. Yes. And you need to acknowledge your kids' feelings when applicable to do so.
And I finally thought of that term, and it's the suspension of disbelief.
Ah.
Ha ha. Okay.
Suspension of disbelief.
Finally. So the study was done by Katrin Schultz and her colleagues. And the way they designed the study was they presented little picture stories to 100 different children. And they aged and ranged from 4 years old to 8 years old. And 52 of the kids were girls. So 52 girls, 48 boys.
Okay.
And the stories involved a child that was either performing a good deed, such as, you know, climbing a tree, gathering fruit for their brother, or a bad deed, which was a kid climbing the tree to throw plums at their brother.
Okay.
So it's like, are they doing it for good reasons or are they being little shits about it? And this was a story. And then the child would experience a misfortune. So like the girl climbing the tree, regardless of the deed she was performing, she would experience a misfortune in another part of the story. And in this example, it was falling from the tree and getting hurt.
Okay. So what are they're showing, or they're telling the kids these stories And
Yeah.
then
Well, they're showing them picture stories. So it's like,
and what's the, what are they looking for? Like, what are they, or
they're looking to see how the children react.
Oh, when they see that picture.
Yes. So they're like, okay, we've got a set of pictures where the girl is performing a good deed and then falling and getting hurt. And then we've got a second set of pictures where the girl is performing a bad deed and then getting hurt. And they're looking to see their reactions to each set of stories.
They laugh.
Yeah. So like, they showed evidence of Schadenfreude, all ages, across the board. And this, the way they kind of explain it here, the kids were more likely to say they were pleased and it was funny if the story character had experienced falling from the tree, so this misfortune, while they were engaging in the bad deed.
Because
they deserve it.
Inherently. Yeah. And inherently, so here's the thing, and it's a moral, like, fucking debate, you know, back and forth about whether or not and how we perceive this and stuff like that. But even without guidance from parental figures, you know the difference between right and wrong.
Yes.
You may not know the intricacies of right and wrong. There are some things that may be a little bit more on the line or in the gray.
Well, or too abstract at that age.
Right. But on the base level, you understand the societal norm of what's right versus wrong.
Yes.
Just inherently by growing up and aging. You get in trouble, you get rewarded when you're good, you get in trouble when you're bad.
You learn perspective taking and can understand what it's like when another person's hurt because you've experienced something similar.
Yeah. So it doesn't surprise me at all that they'd be like, well, he was being bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's basically all it is. It's just like, well, he deserved it.
Yeah. It's like,
he shouldn't have been doing that.
It almost feels like cause and effect.
Yeah.
Even though it's not. It's like, you do bad, bad things happen. You do good, bad things shouldn't happen.
Yeah. Which isn't always the way it works out, because unfortunately, that's not how karma works.
Well, and just how dominoes fall sometimes.
Yeah, how life works.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, when it does happen that way, and that's why things like, when you watch videos about like instant karma and stuff like that, that's when those are just, it's something about it is just so enjoyable. Just to watch somebody be so mean and so horrible and then just immediately just get it right the fuck back.
Because, you know, and you know part of, at least part of the reason why that happens, other than just satisfaction. It's, I think it fits in with this theory of like a just world hypothesis. Because that is justice. If you do bad, bad things happen.
Right.
We want the world to be just. We want the world to be predictable.
It's what we strive for.
Yeah. Well, and we need that. Like, we crave control.
Don't have it.
And we crave being able to know the future. And it also is this protective protective mechanism where, like, so if I don't do bad things won't happen.
Right, which is the incentive for being good.
Yes.
You know, or would be the incentive. In a perfect world, the incentive would be you're good, your life is good. You're bad,
yeah,
your life is bad.
And you're good just because it's the right thing to do, maybe regardless of the outcome.
But the problem is that life doesn't work that way. Mm-mm. And you can be the best person in the world and still have terrible shit happen to you on the fucking regular.
Yeah.
And that's the, I think that's what keeps us from having like that, like, perfect system, is because it just doesn't work like that.
Well,
not
yeah,
everybody who does bad gets bad in return.
No, they do not. They get protected in a lot of cases. So the study, there was also a little bit more to it where overall, like, the children weren't just off the charts in terms of like how much pleasure, how funny they thought it was. It was low.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it was like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. That's kind of funny. So they're not just like getting their rocks off.
Yeah.
About it's this not, happening.
Yeah. It's not like a serial killer. Who's
yeah.
Like, it's different than a sadist, who is someone who inflicts pain because they enjoy watching it on somebody else. So it's not like, I'm not inflicting anything, but I am laughing at what happened to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I am experiencing this little bit of joy and pleasure from it because it's what's supposed to happen. It's like satisfaction. They're satisfied.
Yeah.
And then the other good part of the story, there was pretty much zero Schadenfreude when the good character suffered misfortune. They were more sympathetic. They even had some sympathy for the bad characters. They were like a little bit of pleasure, but I also kind of feel sorry for him.
And that's the complexity of humans. And I think that's what's so frustrating about, like, growing up and not being able to like talk about what you think or imagine in your head.
Yes.
Because, you know, you can feel sorry for somebody. I can feel sorry for a murderer. You know what I mean? And we look at some of these serial killers and stuff like that. Do I think that they're a good person? No.
Yeah.
But do I think that some really awful things happened to them to bring them to that point? Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it did.
Well, and yeah. And do I think they had the potential to be a good person and we failed them?
If things had gone differently, if people hadn't, like, some of the people whose families are cruel to them and stuff like that, like, how do you expect them to become anything else? You know what I mean? And that's the problem. You can go one way or another.
Yeah.
You know, but we don't know what exactly causes that one way or another. And it's different for every single fucking person.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, there's no way to, you know, to gauge and to guess, you know, what that's going to look like. But
yeah, and you never know, like, people can have the same exact experiences and come out vastly different people.
Yeah.
Make vastly different choices. And so that's the difficult part, is like, okay, is there a better way to predict whether the person is going to come out this way, be pretty high functioning, be making good decisions,
productive, emotionally intelligent,
you know, resilient, a little more resilient, which that word is thrown around a lot. And then what about this other individual who, you know, experienced lots of PTSD, a lot of internalized and externalized anger and hostility, and is making these bad decisions and can't function? Like,
yeah.
I think we're getting better at identifying those pieces that kind of differentiate the two, but I think
we're learning.
I don't think we're ever gonna fully figure it out. Like, I think we're gonna constantly be evolving and understanding more, but
we're never gonna fully understand our own brains.
Yeah.
We don't even, we barely, like, not barely, we have a much better understanding on the brain now than we did, you know, hundreds of years ago, but we're still just scraping the fucking surface.
Yes, we are.
Because there's some weird shit that we don't understand, and there are things that you can't predict that are, you know, trapped in somebody's brain. But I don't know. I don't think there's anything wrong with, like, especially when somebody hurts you, you know, getting pleasure from when that person is hurt. You know what it, to me, and we should be honest about that with people, you know. Like, when you go to trial or something, let's say somebody broke into my house and I fucking killed them.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Okay, defending myself. You go to trial, you're getting sued by their family for killing their fucking family member or whatever.
Yeah.
So you're on the stand and I have to sit there and I would have to have a lawyer ask me, well, do you feel any remorse? And I'm the kind of person where no, I don't. Because you came into my house with the intention of hurting me. Like, and I've never killed anyone, so I will never know until, like, if, God forbid, that actually fucking happened, I'll never know. But in my head, like, the way that, like, I think about things, if you come into my territory and try to hurt what is mine, I will hurt you. And I'm not going to feel bad about it because you were doing something bad to start with. Why should I feel worse that you broke into my house?
Yeah. Well, and I think that's a very logical response to it.
You're angry.
Well, you're angry. You're defending yourself.
You think I wanted to kill somebody? You know what I mean? You think I want to be in court? You think I want to be doing this? You know what I mean? Like, we don't really think about, it's like, oh, do you feel remorse? Should she?
Well, and
is she supposed to?
It's not devil's advocate, but to kind of give how I think I might be if that same situation happened to me and I had to kill somebody.
And you're definitely more of like a
empathic blob.
No, like, you have a lot of empathy for people you don't know.
Yes.
I have very little empathy for people I don't know.
Okay.
I have a lot of empathy for my friends, my family, you know, people that I love.
Yeah.
But I have very little empathy outside of that.
Really astute way to distinguish that. Good observation. Yeah.
Which is why you're a psychologist and I just research dark shit. Because my type of empathy would not translate to taking care of other people.
You just treat all your family members. and you quit within like a month of it because it's awful. Let me just tell you how that would go.
But yeah, no.
I think there'd be the part of me that very much is like, I had to do this. I didn't have a choice. It was the best decision to make. But then
you would feel guilty.
Oh, I would feel terrible because I'd be like,
tear yourself apart.
Yeah. Oh, it's gonna destroy me if I ever hit someone with my car.
If you had to.
If I ever have to defend myself and hurt somebody, there's going to be a lot of counseling I am in and a lot of processing, and that's okay. Like I wish I had a little bit more of your perspective sometimes, but at the same time, I realize.
See, sometimes I wish I had more of your perspective though, because my perspective makes me look like a fucking serial killer.
It does.
If in like social, it like it's like,
I'll have to look for some research about empathy because now I'm curious. Like, I think it's more common than you think.
Oh man. But people make you, so like I've been this way my entire life. I've always had people take advantage of me because of how empathetic I would be for them. So I have grown less and less empathetic for people that I do not know because I have been used over and over and over again for my empathy. So I learned not to be that way anymore.
Yeah.
But it does kind of come across bad when, like, you know, one of like my mom is like, so and so died. And I'm like, okay. Like, I don't, do they call me? Do I talk to them? Are we close? Do I know them? Then no, I don't. My head is like, my brain is so broken. I don't have the misery and despair to share. It's already like in there.
And I just wonder if it's, again, if empathy is a little bit more of a spectrum.
I mean,
in the sense of like,
kind of, I mean, you know, I do nice things.
Because I don't have as much empathy for, like, you know, and not to derail this too much, finding out Rush Limbaugh died.
Oh, I don't care.
I didn't really have empathy for him. I have empathy for his family.
I don't.
I have empathy for the people around him that may be suffering.
We're so different.
But that's the extent.
We're so different.
That's the extent of
it. No, I get that. You're taking into account, like, you're, you know, somebody lost.
But there's a limit to my empathy, you know, in that situation. Like, I probably have more empathy for serial killers than I do for him.
Well, at least, you know, serial killers, we do research
on. I know their story.
Exactly. We know that they went through extreme, extreme trauma as a child.
So maybe if I had done some research on him, and I'm not going to, but still.
It's not worth it.
There's a difference between being a hateful bigot and being damaged to the point that you hurt other people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that is, like, I don't know. I was taught empathy. Like, my parents were always, I'm always nice to people.
Oh, yeah.
And I have a hard time being mean to people and saying, you know, what I actually think to people's faces and stuff like that, because I have a hard time, you know, making people unhappy. But.
Sure. Yes.
But I also will not go out of my way for you to make me unhappy is what I had to, like, struggle with and kind of get over, is because, you know, some people deserve my empathy. Others don't.
Sure.
You know, and it makes you sound like a bad person, but it's like, I don't know how to explain it correctly, because it's not like I like go to the store and I pass by an old lady who's having a hard time, like, picking up or carrying her groceries. I'm going to help her take her groceries.
Yeah. It's not that you're not helpful. It's not that you don't care. And it's not that you're not concerned. You just don't have an emotional connection to people you don't know or choose to interact with.
Right. And it's not always the case either. It's not just it's everyone that I don't know, because there are certain stories that we do, was it Banaszewski?
Yes, Gertrude Banaszewski.
Gertrude Banaszewski, where, like, that story made me sad.
Oh, yes. Yes.
You know what I mean?
Sylvia that, Likens.
Sylvia.
Yes.
I feel for Sylvia.
Yeah.
But the problem is, for me, that turns into, like, it's more of like a sad rage to where that person's dead. So Sylvia is dead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So to me, there's no point in me being sad for her unless she was there for me to, like, comfort or something. But there is reason for me to be, like, angry.
Yes.
At the people who were still alive who did it.
Yes. Well, and at the fact that it happened and was allowed to happen.
Right. It's like a frustration and an anger.
Yes. Yes.
And when it comes to people like that, like, I have no, like,
I don't have empathy for Gertrude.
No.
I have empathy for the kids that were involved in it because I feel like they were manipulated.
Well, they were kids. Yeah. I mean, same thing with Javed. It is like he, you know, coerced kids into helping. So like that, I feel bad for them. You know what I mean? They were young and impressionable. When it's a whole different thing. When you're dealing, there's a big difference between a child and an adult.
Yes.
You will find a lot more empathy from me on children because they're not fully formed and they're not.
They're so vulnerable too.
Vulnerable. It's our job to protect, to nourish, to, you know, form and shape and, you know, let them think their own opinions and shit.
Yeah.
Adults, no. Humans are assholes. Like all of them. Yeah. Across the board.
And I mean, I, you know, once a child starts screaming, I don't have empathy for them.
Right?
So
I think that's an it.
I'm not just necessarily this beacon of morality and empathy. Like, I don't want to misrepresent myself.
No, you, I mean, you are. You're just not like, it's not maternal empathy. You know what I mean?
Well, it's maternal empathy. Like if a kid fell down in front of me and was hurt, I'm going to want to help.
Sure.
But it is the screaming and the noise that will give me almost an instant headache. And I know that sounds fake, but it's not. So
I feel like it has to do with anxiety, though. To be fair, I feel like that is also because I also have a really bad reaction to children screaming because it makes me panicky and like sweaty. And I hate it. And I don't feel like I need to go take care of that kid. I just want it to stop.
Oh, well, yeah. That's kind of the way I am if it's not happening right in front of me and there's not a sign of injury or something.
Yeah.
So
that's just like the noise.
I think mine's also that it just irritates the hell out of me.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. Kids screaming is really irritating.
Man, they reach some octaves and pitches.
Oh. Like freaking like whistles. Like little screaming, angry whistles.
Demons.
And we've already stated the kids are mean too. So it's like, it makes it even harder to care for them. It's like, I know you're defenseless and you need me, but you're kind of being an asshole.
Well, maybe. Sometimes they just fucking scream and I don't know what it means.
Nothing.
It all sounds the same.
I know. We need translators. You know those little translators they have for languages that you can put in your ear now?
Yeah.
We need those for like screaming and crying. Mom code. Yeah.
Moms seem to have it. I don't. I'm fine with not having it.
I'm good.
But, well, that is it for our little mini unsatisfactory story. Just thought I'd ruin your day with...
Yay!
They weren't that bad.
Vagina chainsaws and schadenfreude. I'm going to take that with me.
So I love schadenfreude. But that's it, guys.
All right.
Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah. And we will see you on our next episode.
See you later.
Bye.